Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
Exquisite talent, but ridiculous immaturity.
Pope.
New phone, who dis?
Rooster.
The Jersey girl got bageled by Swiatek.
Milk.
God, the greed and the capitalism. Let's go. Come on.
And Bison.
That's fucked up, Milk. That's just fucked up. SMQBs, this is episode 227. This is Bison. We got House and Rooster with me. Hey, House, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I am bringing in a new guy who can go to the bar in Philadelphia. None other than Joan Duran.
Oh, boy.
Let me tell you something. You guys have had the pleasure of having a real closer on your baseball teams for the last several years. Even the Expos down in Washington have had a real closer. And the Yankees in years past have had a great closer. We have just called
Mariano Rivera's in a rocking chair. Don't give me this recent business.
Well, Chapman.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
All right. You know, like you had somebody who was, by definition, a closer. We just kept throwing someone on the mound in the ninth and calling them a closer. Joan Duran.
Didn't you have Papelbon?
Yes, forever ago. I mean, that's been a very, very long time. I mean, Papelbon was like fighting in the clubhouse with whoever it was
Bryce
15
Harper.
Years ago. It is
not that long ago.
Such a pleasure to put on the mound a guy who, setting aside that he throws 103 miles per hour and a 98 mile per hour splitter, he is a real closer that gives you confidence. And what I say to Joan Duran, welcome to town and puedo invitarte a una copa. Can I buy you a drink?
Boy, that was, we might never recover from that. Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar?
Oh, my God. Hey, Giannis announced today that he's still undecided about his future with the Bucks. So I'm going to take him to a bar right next to Madison Square Garden, give him a little taste of the action.
You want that Greek yogurt?
Yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah, you do.
We'll trade for him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you definitely want him. All right, I got a couple people I'm bringing. Jake Eater, Sam Brown. I think I'm also going to bring Sean Paul Lennon and Eric Swan. And I'm going to have to bring name tags because these are the middle relief pitchers that the Nats picked up by trading away a bunch of people. And I have absolutely no idea who any of them are, what they bring to the table, or why they're here. And I'm not sure that they know either. But I just thought maybe a nice little get-together over a beer and we could learn some fun things about them. But I got nobody else to bring, and like I said, they'll need to wear name tags because I have no idea who any of these people are. So don't whine about your closer situation, Rooster. It's only getting darker in D.C. these days.
Yeah. Well, they're going to find out just how dark it's going to get in New York. This is crazy. We're going to talk about that today.
People need to be fired, but we'll get to that.
All right. Before we get into that, let's give some love to our sponsors, Rooster.
Yeah, the show tonight is being brought to you in part by Supio, leader in AI for law firms. They've got a great software package for plaintiffs' law firms who want to rely on some AI to help be more efficient with the workload. So check out supio.com.
All right. Let's jump right into the MLB trade deadline. Sort of a wild one at the end, right? It was kind of quiet until it wasn't. And then it just went absolutely bonkers. I don't even really know where to begin. I guess Seattle is probably a good place to start because I think they may have been the big winner. I think the Phillies get a claim to being a big winner too, based on the closer they brought in. But the Mariners got probably the two best bats in Suarez and Josh Naylor. And I don't think they even gave up either of their top 10 prospects any of their top 10 prospects that they had to get those two guys. It was two separate trades with the Diamondbacks. So you got to think Seattle was kind of a big winner there. It was interesting to me that Carlos Correa went back to Houston. I heard somebody say that it's good because Houston was getting too likable, and now it's okay to hate him again. So that's good. The Padres went
nuts.
I mean, they went bananas, right? They got,
moved, I think, 14 or 15 players, the Padres.
Yeah, I mean, Mason Miller, I guess, was the big one, right? The closer that they brought in, giving up, like, really, I think the number three prospect in baseball, the shortstop, Leo DeVries. But then they also added Ryan O'Hearn, Ramon Laureano.
Big hitters.
A catcher.
Really good hitters.
Freddie Fermin from Kansas City. I mean, just a ton of action in San Diego. I mean, what's his name? AJ Preller is the GM out there, and he definitely does not believe in prospects. You know, you don't have to look that far back. And again, not to make this a Nat thing, but his trade for Soto a few years ago sent the Nats three prospects, all who have been in the All-Star game now and are still all under the age of 24, not to mention a fourth guy who just got called back up and has been raking since he got called back up, Robert Hassel III. So he's not afraid to part with big-time prospects. He doesn't have a lot to show for it yet, though, does he? So,
I mean, the stats are that most of these prospects, it ends up being a wash for the most part. I mean, yeah, so far the Nats have had really good returns. The Padres, obviously, they didn't do that much with Soto, and they made a run at it. But this is, they have mortgaged a lot. They're number one and number three in the system. Some people said that the DeVries trade was like total managerial malpractice.
Insanity.
He's a total can't miss. But look, right now, we've been talking on this pod for the last few weeks about how desperate teams have been for closers and back-end relief. All the teams that were really going for it, from the Mets to the Phillies to the Padres to the Yankees, that was the big move, was getting the top available closers. And actually, I mean, I still think they're going to end up using Miller as a closer. I mean, that really is what he is. There's been some talk that they might use him as a starting pitcher.
Nah.
But the Padres, it's like this year and next year were total bust. They have ransacked their farm system.
Well, House, I mean, we were teasing you a little bit about this, about your trade for Duran, where you gave up on the catching prospect,
Eduardo
Tate, and also a pitcher, young pitcher, Mick Abel. I mean, that's the debate, right? How much are you willing to mortgage the future for now? I mean,
well, how old is Real Muto?
Old.
He's up there. Yeah. He's up there. I think he's 34.
Wow.
But the flip side of that is Tate was pretty young, right? Tate's 18.
19 or something like 19, yeah.
Yeah, so he's not necessarily the guy who's going to step in like next year for Real Muto. Or he's still got 3-4 years before he'll be in the big leagues, probably.
At least. I think Major League Baseball, when you're this close, it has to be a win-now mentality. I mean, like, who knows? There's so many things that happen on the way to the game between injuries and other trades that have to be made. I mean, I don't know. When you had your World Series, were those free agent acquisitions or some of them trade acquisitions, the pitching staff and stuff?
Yeah, so, well, Scherzer had been here. Corbin came in as a free agent to start the season. I'm trying to remember when we picked up Adam Eaton, because that was a trade. We traded Lucas Giolotto, who went to the White Sox and had one really good year, and I don't think he's done too much since then. And I would do that trade 1,000 times over, you know, now. But most of those, I don't remember there being like...
It was Worth?
Oh, that was Worth way before.
No. Yeah, but was he on that team?
No.
Did he?
No.
He did not get it. And what about Kendrick?
Yeah. Well, Howie Kendrick was MVP, I think, of the divisional series and the NLCS. So he played a huge role and, of course, had the winning home run in Game 7. But he came in as a free agent also. The other one who may have come in by trade was Daniel Hudson, who closed it
reliever.
Out. Reliever? Yeah. And I think he came mid-season. And maybe Doolittle, too. So I don't really remember, to be honest with you. It's been so long.
I mean,
ago.
Rooster, I know you're not happy so far with how the relievers have done, but let's assume things even out a little bit. I mean, wouldn't you rather – you're right on the edge there in the East. You're stocked at the plate. I mean, wouldn't you rather – the Yankees have always had a great farm system, still have a great farm system. Wouldn't you rather give these guys away and make a run for it?
Yeah, and since my outburst after the first night when all three of the new relievers came in and proceeded to give up 12 runs – between them and blow a giant lead. You know, my impression in that game was we just went for the wrong trade prospects because of the nature of our team. We don't have power pitchers on the Yankees right now. And you have to have some power pitching to succeed. We have a bunch of sinker ballers and sliders and changeup guys. And that's what I was seeing from Bednar, Duvall, and Bird in that game. But then I did some research on these guys, and I find out that they actually are power pitchers. Bednar has a high-velocity four-seamer and you know, was the saves leader for the National League in 2023. Duvall can hit 101 miles an hour, and Bird has a 96-mile-an-hour sinker. So I'm going back and reevaluating this and thinking that maybe our problem is our catcher doesn't know how to call a game. Because if you watch a Yankees game right now, every pitcher is throwing sinkers that are low. You know, they're not going to be a called strike unless the guy swings at it. And nobody's swinging at this stuff. And so, you know, the pitcher's down 2-0. And then throws a meatball, and they're getting slammed. Our catcher Wells is a good hitter, a dumbass on the base paths. Obviously, you saw that recently, where he got thrown out at second base because he thought there were three outs when there were only two. And I think he calls a terrible game. And I think whoever is the pitching coach needs to go, and the manager needs to go. We've got all kinds of problems that don't have to do with talent, but have to do with terrible defense, terrible base running, not hitting situationally, and we're calling bad games for our pitchers. Nobody's throwing smoke. The hitters are not afraid of any of our pitchers right now. That's my problem with the Yankees, and I think we just need a clean house. When your record from June 1st through now is worse than the records of the White Sox, the A's, and the Pittsburgh Pirates, you got a problem.
Yeah.
Ooh. And each one of those teams may have, if they're lucky, a third of the payroll that the Yankees have.
You know, it does seem like a lot of the contenders really did load up on the bullpen, though, because, you know, we obviously covered the Phillies, but the Mets did, too. The Mets added
Helsley
two guys.
And Rogers.
Yeah. Yep.
That's where it is. The winner of the trade deadline is going to be found in the eighth and ninth innings in the NL playoffs. Mason Miller versus Ryan Helsley versus Juan Duran. Like, which one of these guys shuts it down?
Yeah. And, you know, House, we were giving you a lot of shit the other day about trading away your future. But, you know, maybe us non-Phillies fans forgot, but I was reminded, how many saves did Kimbrel blow that year, where you guys were close. Did he blow World Series leads?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there's, you know, the Phillies aren't going to let that happen again, I guess.
Look, I think the Phillies did the right thing. I think you're right, Bison. The Padres, the Mariners, maybe top two if trade deadline grades, followed closely by the Phillies and the Mets. That guy, Duran, looked amazing.
Yeah. No, he's special. He's special. The interesting story is for the couple of teams that really stood pat, most notably the Brewers. The Brewers still have some gaps. I mean, by the way, all of Major League Baseball is awesome right now because the top like 13 teams that are headed to the playoffs are separated by 7 games. It's no one's running away with this thing. I think the top team that's heading into the playoffs right now has 67 wins, and the last team that would make the playoffs right now has 60 wins.
Yeah.
And I think the number one is the Brewers right now, but the Brewers did nothing. And it will be interesting to see come playoff time if some of the gaps that they have in their lineup come back to bite them. And in their pitching staff, they had a couple holes that need to be filled, and they did nothing.
So it's really interesting that you bring up the Brewers, because I wanted to talk about them in a little bit of a different context. And that context being comparing them as a medium to small market team to some of the mammoths. The Brewers, their salary, they rank, let's see, where are they? They are 20th in baseball, all right, for salary. Their total payroll this season is $113 million. The active payroll is about $69 million. Contrast that with the Mets, whose total payroll is $339 million, and their active payroll is just a hair under $300 million.
So, wow, what pigs.
So, but here's the thing about the Brewers, and they just kicked the Nationals' ass 3 days in a row. But what's interesting about them is I think they've been in the playoffs like the last 8 years or something, maybe seven of the last 8 years. Their record going back, they had 96 wins in 18, 89 in 19. The 2020 season was the COVID season. They had 95 in 21. 86 and 22, 92, 93, and now they have the best record in baseball right now. Throw in there, their GM left for the Mets a couple years ago. Craig Counsell, their manager, left to go be the Cubs manager. They hired from within, and I can't take credit for this analysis because I was listening to the Nats Chat podcast where they brought this all up. But, you know, yesterday, Mizorowski was supposed to start. And before the game, they had to, sometime Saturday night, they put him on the IL because of a bruised shin or something, nothing serious. But they brought a guy up who in the minors had like a 1.7 ERA, and he came right in, mowed him down. That is a franchise that is built the right way. They have something about it. And then you look at the teams like the Yankees, right? Or like, you know, the Mets or the Dodgers, who have unlimited cash flow, but seem to always have some little hole, right? Maybe not the Dodgers so much, but it's a really interesting contrast. And then, of course, you have the Marlins. I think the Marlins, did they sweep the Yankees this weekend?
Yes. They were swept by the damn Marlins.
The Marlins story is unbelievable. The Marlins have the lowest payroll in all of Major League Baseball. They also happen to have tied for the best record since June 9th. They're 30-14. They've had six series that they've won in a row. They're now 55-55. They're in striking distance of a wild card. The entire team, almost except for one player, is under 30 years old. They have an outfielder, this kid Kyle Stower, that was player of the month. He's got like 1,200 OPS he's got 24 home runs. Here's what's crazy about the Marlins. They have this Tommy John trio, Yuri Perez, Edward Cabrera, and Sandy Alcantara. Three pitchers who are pitching amazing. And this is what Bison has said all along. It's a different thing now today when you get the Tommy John.
They're all throwing smoke.
They're all post-Tommy John. They're all throwing smoke, and Yuri Perez and Edward Cabrera are two of the best in the National League. And then they've got three good relievers. So, I mean, look, Milk, quit your crying about your payroll. The Marlins have figured it out. It's one of the more exciting stories in baseball. Yeah, I guess most of the people sitting in the seats for the Yankee series were transplants from the North that wanted to go see it. But still, to see the Marlins stadium full shocked me.
Yeah, they were full, and they were maybe a third Yankees fans, but there were some pretty excited Marlins fans in that crowd. I watched all three of those games. And I'll tell you that they are an excellent contrast to the Yankees. Their GM has got young guys, not afraid to take some risks on the roster, and not afraid to lose some people. Like they lost Jazz Chisholm and others. Meanwhile, the Cashman for the Yankees cannot seem to, bear the idea of getting rid of washed up players like Josh Donaldson, who he hung on to for years at third base, and then DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu used to be a great hitter, no question about it, but he is not now, and we hung on to him for 3 years longer than we should have.
So I'll tell you that it's actually, Miami has the second lowest. Minnesota's now lower after the dump off.
But, okay, but fair.
But same point. I mean, Minnesota's active roster, $35 million. Remember, I just said the Mets was just a hair under $300
million. Well, they moved everybody.
Million. Yeah, but Miami's at $38 million. Now, here's the problem, though, with what you're saying about the Marlins, because it is exciting right now. But talk to me when that franchise keeps those players around. I mean, they didn't trade anybody this time, so maybe they're going to invest in the team a little bit. But they've had these decent teams, and they've had these decent teams, and they've let them just go and some or trade them or not re-sign them. So let's see if they keep the team together.
Jeter still involved?
No, not with the Marlins. No,
he's no longer. Is it?
No.
So I'm curious also at the top, who's besides the GM, like who's going to be responsible for that decision that Bison's talking about? Because traditionally, Marlins are basically future Yankees or future whatever, future Dodgers.
Right, right.
Like, will they keep this team together because they're building something?
It sound the announcers made it sound like they are building something and they're not going to repeat their past ways. And they even had Jack McKean in, as the former GM, former manager of that team during their World Series days, kind of giving them a boost. I think they've turned the page in Miami. One team we haven't talked about, which is with the team that has the best record in the American League, or at least tied for it, is Toronto. They didn't do a whole lot. They didn't need to do a whole lot, but they did pick up Shane Bieber from Cleveland. Does he still have anything in the tank?
Well, he's another one that's he underwent Tommy John. So it's really how he is coming back from that. We'll see. Our friend Moose is crowing about the Blue Jays. They certainly have the pop. Their their lineup is tough to get through. We'll see.
They're confident too. They're aggressive on the base path. They're the opposite of the Yankees on the base path. They're smart and they take extra bases all game long.
The Red Sox aren't lying down either. So. Yeah, the AL East they're in the wild card position right now too.
Yeah.
And they've got two great pitchers.
Yankees are in third place. People talk about them like they're a shoo-in for the World Series. They're in third place in the East.
No, I got my money on the Phillies and the Brewers right now. Those are the teams I'm putting money on for the World Series right now.
Be interesting to see what the Padres do.
Well, yeah, you got to get odds. You got to play a little bit of the odds game too. I'm not saying that for sure thing, but it's got to be worth the investment. I think one other thing on baseball we have to mention is Ohtani, right? Sometime last week he pitched and he got to the fourth inning, I think. And, he's doing this rehab thing, which is complicated because they're not sending him down to the minors. They want his bat in the lineup. So they brought him in where he threw like one inning and then two innings. And then three innings, and he got to the start where he was going four, and he walked off the mound after six straight balls, looking like he was injured. I think everybody got really nervous. What I've read, tell me if I'm wrong, but what I saw was that it was really a hip issue, and he was having some cramps, and he's actually on schedule to make his next start. So it doesn't sound like it's
an arm.
Oh,
he is?
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's an arm injury, which is good news for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
So I still wouldn't put him on the mound.
Yeah, well, we covered that. I mean, it's that, you got to see the what we talked about, the fear there. Do you lose him for the postseason? Because you still have your window to win the World Series, win another one. So, all right, you guys got anything else on baseball?
Would you be willing to go see a baseball game with 91,000 other people where you couldn't have any view whatsoever of the game? It was impossible to go to the bathroom, find a beer, and it would take you 4 hours to get out of the parking lot.
I wouldn't see any event in Bristol, Tennessee, but that's just me.
Well, we just lost the Tennessee following, so that's okay.
They had attendees at this game from all 50 states. All 50 states, 91,032 was the official attendance, with concerts from none other than Tim McGraw and Pitbull. Do you know what the prior record was for the largest attendance of all time?
For a baseball game, MLB
yeah.
game?
You would not believe this.
63,000?
It was in 84,587 in 1954 in Cleveland Stadium.
Oh.
I don't even know how that's possible.
I thought you were going to say the Polo Grounds or something, because that place was huge.
It was pretty cool, though. After a home run, they had a NASCAR, like a car, go around the circuit, which is kind of cool. That's how they celebrated the home run instead of fireworks and stuff. Listen, I'll be the first one to blast baseball for that they can't get anything right, but the Field of Dream games, this thing, it's gotten attention. I mean, it's gotten people there. They filled the stadium, right? And those people came back after a rain delay, you know, that they had to come back the next day to play that game.
Right.
So it's definitely interesting.
It's fun.
Well, listen, speaking of Tennessee, Rooster, one of our very good sponsors is based in Tennessee.
That's right. That's right. In Nashville, Digital Law Marketing. You know, the number one thing I hear people who run plaintiffs, trial law firms complain about is the lack of effectiveness of their website. And Bison and I are here to tell you, make the switch to Digital Law Marketing. They're excellent. They're really good at what they do. They give you exclusivity in your region, and you will see your organic originations go through the roof within about a year, and then you don't have to be paying so many referral fees. DigitalLawMarketing.com.
Yeah, Rooster, I've always loved your website, and they just launched a new one for us. So you could check out the Phelan Petty site or Nace Law Group, and if you want to see their work, because they're both really good sites. Let's talk a little fantasy football. And I have to say, listening to you guys, you know, I missed you last week. I'm not sure if I believe anything you're saying. We're all in a league together, and I'm not sure how much truth is being spoken here. But, Rooster, talk to us about wide receivers.
Well, you know, I thought long and hard about how much I was willing to even say because of that. We're all in a league together. But we're going to talk wide receivers and tight ends if we have time. And it's my opinion that there is an abundance of talent at wide receiver this year. A lot of people are healthy. And it just sort of kind of dovetails with Milk's advice last week, which is draft running backs first, because there are a ton of wide receivers you can get. I think there are like 40 wide receivers that who could have really good years, maybe even more.
Wow.
And I don't know that I'm going to jump in on Jamar Chase or Nico Collins or Justin Jefferson with one of my first two picks at this point because of that.
Rooster's first pick is Justin Jefferson. Write it down now.
Well,
yeah, this is misdirection play.
If you're going to do something like that, if you're going to go that high, then you need to think about who's the quarterback for this guy this year. At least Jamar Chase has Joe Cool, but I'm not taking Brian Thomas with my first or second pick because he's got Trevor Lawrence throwing him the ball, and I'm not taking Justin Jefferson until I know if some, you know, J.J. McCarthy's any good. I don't know that yet, so you know, I'd maybe wait and take Jordan Addison in a later round if I had to, but you know, Puka Nacua I thought was a pretty safe pick, but who knows what old man Stafford's back is up to these days. So I think I'm going to stock up on running backs and revisit the wide receivers with guys like, you know, Mike Evans, who you can get much later, and Flowers, Zay Flowers. I love him. He's a huge producer who always goes lower than probably he should have. I think McMillan for Carolina is going to be a new star.
I like him. I like him. Travis Hunter, I think, will have a decent year despite his quarterback. But I would like, you know, I'm not going to take Brian Thomas, but I think you can get value with Travis Hunter because of the quarterback problems there. What do you guys think?
You know, normally I hate to give away my drafting strategy, but I'm hoping the rest of the league isn't listening to this episode. But, you know, my drafting strategy is, whether it's a running back or wide receiver, you draft the featured player who's going to get most of the balls. And normally I stay away from wide receivers who are sharing the ball. But last year, I really don't remember whether it was me or somebody else that took A.J. Brown. And when Pope then went on to take Devontae Smith, I was like, yeah, I don't know about that. Are there enough balls to go around? Great wide receivers are going to get theirs. They're going to get their yards. They're going to get their touchdowns. By the way, a lot of what we're talking about changes some if you're talking about a PPR league. For example, in a PPR league, like Puka Nacua has got to be at the very top. He just gets so many catches per game. You know, do you believe in Dak Prescott? If you believe in Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb is going to get a lot of balls. Do you believe in Jared Goff? Amon-Ra St. Brown, that's your guy. He's going to share some balls with Jameson Williams. Mm-hmm. But these days, like, I don't shy away anymore when there's someone sharing balls. Like, I would not shy away from Amon-Ra just because Jameson is going to get some of his.
Let me ask you this, House. Malik Nabers may be the second most talented wide receiver on the board, but are you going to risk picking him high with Russell Wilson as his quarterback?
I don't think so. I mean, that Nabers is an exception there. I mean, same goes, listen, as much as, you know, the old Aaron Rodgers was reliable, who the hell knows, you know, about Aaron Rodgers? Who the hell knows about, you know, at a certain point, someone does have to sling them the ball. We haven't talked at all about one of your favorite guys, Ladd McConkey, at the Chargers. I still believe enough in Herbert. I think McConkey's a stud this year.
Yeah.
Jamar Chase, how many balls is going to be taken away from Jamar Chase for T. Higgins? I think T. Higgins is going to have a great year too.
You guys haven't mentioned one other thing. You're talking about quarterbacks and receivers, but what about the tight ends that get the touchdowns, right? What about the guys who are the touchdown machines, like, you know, the George Kittles and Brock Bowers? I mean, do they like negate wide receivers on those teams? Because if it gets anywhere inside the 10, that's who's getting the touchdown, right? The tight end.
Right, and there are so few of those guys.
I think for a long time they did in Kansas City. This year, my money really is on Xavier Worthy. Maybe I'm just focused a little bit on when they were playing catch up in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, when Eagles weren't really caring about the game at the end. But Xavier Worthy can get behind any defense. And I really think Mahomes is going to start going to him a lot more than even last year. And where he's ranked right now, somewhere close to, like, I don't know, between 22 and 25 as a wide receiver, I think that's way undervalued. I think he should be much higher. You'd have to believe that the touchdowns for Travis Kelce goes down. The same happens in Detroit. You know, they've got a great wide receiver. The same happens in Dallas. They have a very good wide receiver. So I still think at the end of the day, these guys are pretty consistent with getting theirs. Do you believe in Michael Penix?
I do.
You guys believe in Michael Penix?
I do, take
Drake London.
Yep. So speaking of tight ends, there's one guy who's not showing up on any of the top 20-plus picks on any of the sheets I've seen, who I think is going to surprise some folks. And this is Elijah Arroyo on the Seattle Seahawks. He played for University of Miami and got hurt. And he was drafted based on his talent, speed, size, hands, et cetera, thinking that he probably wouldn't be ready until, you know, mid to late season. Well, he's ready now. He's probably going to start game one. And he would be a great second pick for tight end, in my opinion. I wouldn't waste a second tight end pick
when someone like that is lurking out there. And you can always get someone like Lively as well late. So I'd get a good tight end early, earlier than normal maybe this year, and I'd just be confident in the fact that there are going to be some wide receivers who have great years that we're not counting on.
I think with tight ends, you know, there's 3, 4, maybe 5 guys who are like going to make a difference for your team. Besides those guys, that's one of those positions that I kind of look at week to week. You can often find matchups, I think, that are worth a pickup.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, I don't know, there's always going to be somebody who jumps the gun and takes a quarterback early. House, didn't you take a tight end early last year or the year before? And was it Kelsey?
Yeah, I think Kittle. I think I took Kittle pretty early. It might have been Kelsey. Kelsey got hurt. He did not have a good year. I think last year is when I took Kelsey early on. It came back to bite me. But the years prior, people were taking Kelsey in the first and second round. It was working out. Right now, I think maybe Brock Bowers is worth a first or second round pick. Most of these other guys, Trey McBride, George Kittle, Sam Laporta, I don't know about top 2 rounds. I keep waiting. I don't know whether it's going to be this year. I still am not giving up on Kyle Pitts.
He's
going to
say Njoku.
No,
Kyle Pitts.
It's Kyle Pitts. This guy is the biggest waste of talent. I mean, what did they draft him at? Number 5 overall or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
They have got to make this guy work in Atlanta.
House, you took Jake Elliott in the 4th round last year, didn't you?
No, I did not. No. Would have been a great pick, but I didn't. I mean,
I think that Mark Andrews is going to have a comeback year.
Yes.
And I think Kelsey is too, because he's in great shape. Last year he wasn't. He showed up fat and happy and slow. This year he's in midseason form already, right now.
Do not underestimate how pissed off Travis Kelsey is from that game. That guy has a competitive fire like very, very few. He is so pissed off from that Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs are going to come out, at least for the first few games, just whipping people.
And I can tell you, I am going to be extremely pissed if Darren Waller turns out to be anything for Miami after the shit show he was in New York, where he didn't want to play. I wouldn't draft that guy. I'd draft the 3rd kicker before I took him.
Somebody will do that. Somebody will do that. All right. Let's move on from fantasy. Rooster, we got another sponsor, though, that we want to talk about, right?
We do. We do. Assembly Software was our very first sponsor for the SMQBs, and we have a real fondness for them, soft spot for Assembly. Assembly is the premier software for case management for plaintiffs' law firms. Neos is their current cloud-based system, but you all know them from TrialWorks and Needles. They've been around forever, and their staff is top-notch. You know, there's nothing more frustrating than switching case management software programs, and if you don't have the proper tech support for it, your staff is going to be angry. We switched to Neos, and our staff loves it because the Neos folks have been just available and helpful on the spot. So check out assemblysoftware.com.
Rooster, right before the pod, I was screwing something up in Neos, and I put a ticket in with them, and I had a phone call like in 30 seconds. It was wild. I mean, they were literally responded to the ticket that fast, and it was up, and they showed me what I was doing wrong. That was good.
Yeah, where else do you get that kind of service?
Yeah.
Nowhere.
Yeah. There's a little something House wants to talk about NFL related. Not fantasy, not real NFL, but Madden.
House has been hanging out with his kids a little too much.
Yeah, he's fired up about this.
I kept seeing these tweets from players or reactions from a lot of pundits in the NFL having just exasperated like disbelief over, if nothing else, NFL, the ratings on Madden NFL, EA Sports, it's in the game. So look, let me tell you about the business that is Madden NFL. Yes, it's not just the kids that play the game. There are a lot of adults that play the game. There's a lot of players that play the game. This is a, you know, four, they've made $1 billion just in fiscal year 2025 in net bookings. EA Sports overall made $7.4 billion fiscally, and $1 billion of that went to one of their games, Madden. So it's a massive franchise. It's been around almost 30 years now. And what they've done very cleverly that's been replicated in a lot of other video games is they look at these players' different ability levels, and then they give them an overall rating. And now the overall rating that's assigned to these players has a greater impact than you think. The top rating that you can get as an overall rating is a 99. And players take as a badge of pride being in the at least in the over 90 club, and they take a lot of umbrage if they're not as highly rated as you think. And interestingly, like, there were a couple stories just today. There was a cornerback on the Detroit Lions that publicly spoke about being upset about his Madden rating. I mean, not like it was the end of the world, but he basically shut down a wide receiver based on speed. He blocked a pass, and what he barked out is like, take that to Madden, tell that to Madden. Like, these guys, it is in their head. The Ravens, one of the Ravens assistant GMs acknowledged that when they are assessing players for draft or trades, they actually look, they look at a million different things. But one of the things they look at is the actual Madden rating. Why they look at the Madden?
That's insanity. It's
insanity,
I
mean, right?
I don't mind the players taking umbrage to it because, you know, these guys are so competitive that whatever they can give themselves an edge with, and if they let it get under their skin to put a chip on their shoulder, right, and piss them off, then that's just the mental games they play with themselves, I think. But the GMs, come on.
It's crazy.
I remember last year about this time, when a ton of criticism was being hurled by Jets players or former players at Woody Johnson, the owner. And one of the things they were saying was this organization is so dysfunctional that Woody Johnson is like overriding the GM based on what he sees on Madden. And the GM is like ready to pull his hair out because he's like, the owner knows nothing about football, but is interjecting himself based on what he sees on Madden.
I'm just saying it's a greater impact than you think. Who would you rather have at quarterback next year, Matthew Stafford or Jaden Daniels?
Are you serious?
Well, I am serious.
So you're telling us that Matthew Stafford is rated higher on Madden than Jaden Daniels?
Who do you think is a better quarterback?
Jaden Daniels.
I think so, too. I think Jaden Daniels, this guy is willing to say publicly in front of Bison that I think Jaden Daniels is already a better quarterback right now than Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford is an 88 and Jaden Daniels is an 85.
House, you broke up there. I think you need to say that again.
I'm just saying for this year, Jaden Daniels is better than someone who's entering a nursing home. That much I can say. So
maybe not with Terry McLaurin on the sideline.
You know, like, how is Jaden Daniels an 85 and Matthew Stafford is an 88?
I don't know.
How is A.J. Brown a 93 and Amon-Ra St. Brown a 96? I know Amon-Ra's a good receiver. A.J. Brown is a top 1-2-3 wide receiver in the NFL. These guys, I'm telling you, it bothers them a lot. How is Jonathan Taylor an 88? As a running back? The guy can barely run anymore. By the way, rookie quarterbacks, remember, the top, you know, once you're really good, you're in the 80s, and when you're amazing, you're in the 90s. Cam Ward, the number one overall pick, is a 71. Shedeur Sanders is a 67. I'm telling you, we joke about what players and coaches say as bulletin board material. There may be no bigger bulletin board material right now for these players than what their Madden rating is. Whatever it takes to get you going. I just love that you know, art is now more than imitating life. It's affecting life. I think it's pretty funny, and I think it's pretty real.
We're living in the Matrix. Like, we're living in the Matrix. We're just there on the edge. By the way, who's on the cover this year?
None other than Saquon Barkley.
Oh, no. That's not good. You don't want to be there.
Wasn't McCaffrey on last time?
I mean,
Saquon's, he's going to defy the curse.
You might as well put him on the Sports Illustrated cover too, right? Is that even a thing
anymore? I know. Look what happened to James Wood after the home run derby. I told you. I told you the guy should never be in it. There are certain curses in sports. The Madden cover, the home run derby. I'm a little nervous about Saquon, but let's hope we beat the curse.
All right, Rooster, we got another sponsor?
We do. Our friends at Injury Board have a company that is comprised of the best trial lawyers from around America, Canada, and Western Europe, and they provide some amazing networking opportunities and educational experiences for these folks. If you feel like you are in a leadership position in your state or local bar, and you'd like to be considered, you should check out injuryboard.org because you will get some amazing education and referrals from other states and great friendship from an amazing group of lawyers. Injuryboard.org.
All right, guys, who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
I do have a punch. Don't you also, Rooster?
I do. Go ahead.
All right.
Mine is talking about the MLB trade deadline. I want to take the fists of all those people that live in Pittsburgh and punch the management of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yes.
The Pittsburgh Pirates have unquestionably, I mean, other than Ohtani, there's a couple of really very exciting players, but I think we can all agree that pitcher Paul Skeens is one of the top 1, 2, 3 most exciting players in baseball. He is a player you can build a team around. We talked about the Marlins. We've talked about the Rays. We just talked about the Brewers. It is possible for a small market team to compete. The Pirates traded away Ke'Bryan Hayes, very, very good player. David Bednar, superstar closer. Bailey Falter, very serviceable pitcher. Adam Frazier, Caleb Ferguson, Taylor Rogers. They decimated, they eliminated any chance that this team can compete in the next couple years. So now they start over again. And what? So by year 5 or 6, then maybe Skeens, what they did.
Don't forget about O'Neill Cruz too.
What they did with this deadline is they basically wrote off any chance that you're going to see Paul Skeens be the future of this franchise. Yep. He's either going to want to leave or they're going to say, it doesn't make sense for us anymore and let's sell high. And that is outrageous. What are you in the sport for? If you don't want to compete, sell the team. And I just give such an unbelievable uppercut to that Pittsburgh Pirates management. It's a travesty. I feel bad for those fans.
They're a joke, and they had the core of a decent young team that they could have built on. You're right. They just don't care. They don't want to win, and they know that the Pittsburgh faithful will continue to come to the stadium and pay them enough money.
I know Milk rails about the need for a salary cap in baseball, but we may need a salary floor in baseball.
That's true.
That's probably the better conversation to be having right now as a new collective bargaining agreement comes up, is should there be a floor? Because some of these teams, the Nats included right now, are not trying to win. At least it doesn't feel like they are as a fan. So, good punch.
I'd be really pissed if I was a fan and I had O'Neill Cruz and Skeens on my team, and they just traded away my closer and all the other guys that house were out above.
Wasn't it the all-star third baseman?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, come on. All right, Rooster, you got a punch?
I do. You know, growing up, I had the pleasure of being entertained by the antics of George Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees.
Oh, boy.
A lot of this has been brewing. The manager, Billy Martin, would not tolerate any kind of lollygagging. He famously pulled their superstar, Reggie Jackson, off the field mid-inning because he didn't think he hustled after a fly ball, and then physically tried to fight him in the dugout. George Steinbrenner would fire Billy Martin 1 year and hire him back 2 years later, he would have no hesitation to get rid of coaches, players, you name it. Got into big spats with some of his big stars like Dave Winfield. And his son turns out to be a world-class pussy who is just sitting there watching the Yankees suck. As I told you, they have the worst record in baseball since June 1st. They have the high payroll, and they can't outperform the White Sox right now, or the Pirates, you know, or the Oakland A's. Get rid of Cashman. Get rid of Boone. Let's get some discipline on this team. Maybe start out the year in spring training, focusing on defense and base running. Why don't you take a guy like Jazz Chisholm and teach him how to bunt in spring training, for God's sakes, and steal some bases? I mean, this is such basic stuff. It's like little league level stuff that the Yankees can't do well. And that has to be on the manager. It just has to be.
Has to be. Totally agree.
Why did Jazz Chisholm say that he would do the same thing again? I mean, this thing, if people didn't see this thing where Chisholm was on a somewhat soft fly ball to second base, Chisholm was a little bit leading off of first, and he just got stuck there.
He was well,
and they were able to pick him off at first for a double play.
His excuse was he thought they were gonna purposely drop the ball on the infield fly rule.
Come on, nobody does that.
Yeah, no. I know.
That's not even half
as bad as Austin Wells getting caught in a rundown after being moved over from first to second on a fielder's choice, and then thinking that it was the third out, and then just like jogging back to first and getting picked off. You know, in the ninth inning.
Awful. Awful. Brutal.
Close. I mean, it's just terrible.
Brutal. Good punches. Those are good punches. I'm on board with all those. Does anybody have a lasso?
I do.
Oh.
I'm going to give credit where credit is due and give a citation to Matt Gelb and The Athletic, who wrote this story, which I love these kind of behind-the-scenes stories. But there's a guy named Dustin Morse, who is the vice president of communications of the Minnesota Twins. And if you didn't follow the MLB trade deadline, the Twins, talk about decimating their team. They traded everybody away. At one point, they had like two players on their active roster who could field. You know, they brought up their AA and AAA team given how many people they traded away. So it was probably a pretty depressing time for anybody in management, including the vice president of communications and the number one guy that was traded away, the superstar of them all, was Joan Duran. And so he was going to be on the Phillies. I guess the trade deadline was Wednesday, and he was going to be on the Phillies on Friday.
I'm compelled to sing a little Hungry Like the Wolf, the way you pronounced his name there.
The Phillies called up the Twins, and they basically said, hey, we love this entrance, this intro that you've done for him. We'd love to use it in Philadelphia. And it's kind of an interesting story of intellectual property. You know, those things that we, you know, the whole Timmy Trumpet, Edwin Diaz and the Mets and some of these other guys, and now the lights go out in all these stadiums. Like, you think it's at the snap of the fingers. It turns out that a team on the Minnesota Twins took over 500 hours to complete this whole, the graphics and the tarantula spider going across the fiery graphic with, you know, Duran on the graphics of the scoreboard. And, you know, he said, he came to the player and he said, hey, listen, would you still like to have that intro if we send it over to Philly? And the player said, Duran said, yeah, I love it. It's great what you guys have done. If I can keep it, I'd love to have it. And they kind of huddled up in Minnesota and they said, what should we do here? And they said, you know what? This is not really about what we created for the Minnesota Twins. This is what we created for the game of baseball. The game does belong to the fans. Let's send it to Philly. Let's send all of it. The graphics, the timing, the song, because the song isn't just a plain song that you can just pick off of Spotify. They had mixed two songs together. It was a customized mix that the Twins did. All of it was their intellectual property, what belonged to them. And They brought it to the Phillies. And by the way, that choreography on its own, even though you've got 24 to 36 hours to put it together, is not so simple either. And I was there last night, not the first game that Duran appeared on Friday night, but I was there last night and Duran pitched and he came in the ninth and I saw that production. It is so unbelievably electric. It is theater, especially with 45,000 people and the flashes on the phones going off and the place going crazy. And you got two first place teams, the Phillies and the Tigers, going at it. And good on the Twins and you, Dustin Morse, for doing what is right by the game. That's what the lasso is about. We're gonna make you proud with that. I promise we're gonna make you that proud all the way into the playoffs. And if we make the playoffs and you see that on national television, I hope people will be slapping you on the back and giving you credit for doing what's right for the game of baseball.
That's a good one.
I forgot I have a lasso. Do you have one, Bison?
No, but I was just going to say, whatever anybody talks about the Timmy Trumpets thing, I can't get the image out of the meme where they're playing taps after the Mets went out of the playoffs. I've never been able to unsee that, so sorry. All right, Rooster, what do you got?
Well, the Cleveland Browns may have a Vince Papale. Was that, remember that guy?
Vince Papale. Invincible.
They may have a Vince Papale situation on their hands.
Really?
There is a guy, 5'8 player, undrafted, walked on from Kent State. His name is Luke Florea. And just today, Coach Stefanski or whatever his name is, announced that they just can't cut this guy. He's been unstoppable in camp, and he's probably going to make the team. So keep your eyes out for Luke Florea, and let's hope he makes it because it's a real feel-good story. He's, like I said, he's 5'8", but no one's been able to cover him, which
That
maybe says more about the Browns than
right. It
does about Luke, but we'll see.
Right. All right.
I'm all for the short guys.
Yeah, right. All right, listen, it's buzzer beater time. Before we jump in, I'm going to use my buzzer beater, though, to do a pour out for one of the great baseball players of all time, Ryan Sandberg, passed last week at age 65. Here's some of the stats on Sandberg. You know, he was actually recruited to play quarterback at Washington State University, but got drafted by the Phillies in the 20th round and decided to go play baseball instead. He was with the Phillies for a couple years. It wasn't really until 1983 where he kind of got hot with the Cubs. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a second. But he had a batting average, career average of – he played from 81 to 97. Career average of 285, 2386 hits, 282 home runs, 1,000-plus RBIs. He actually was a manager for who, House? For the Phillies. And a coach. Didn't do great as a manager, 428 winning percentage, but 10-time All-Star, 84 NL MVP, 9-time Gold Glove, 7-time Silver Slugger. He was the NL home run leader in 1990. He had his Cubs jersey retired. He's in the Cubs Hall of Fame. Also went into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2005, which third ballot. That was surprising to me that it was
very
third ballot. But here's kind of the fun story, I think, is the Sandberg game. Do you guys remember this?
I do. Two grand slams?
No, it wasn't two grand slams, but it was a Cardinals-Cubs game. Some of these stats, listen to this, are crazy. June 23rd, all right? So that season, Bruce Sutter, who's a Hall of Fame closer, he would end up with 45 saves that year. Sandberg wasn't... He wasn't Ryan Sandberg yet. This is what made him. So he comes up in the ninth inning, down 9-8, hits a solo home run off of Sutter, send the game into extras. Well, the Cardinals go up two runs. I hope Tad's listening to this. He'll probably remember. Go up two runs in the 10th, and then Sandberg hits a two-run homer off of Sutter in the 10th to tie the game again. So remember, this is a Hall of Fame closer. By the way, who's pitching the ninth and the 10th? We should note that. It also had 45 saves, but we don't have closers who go two innings anymore. And so, you know, Harry Carey had the wild call, and he says, what would the odds be if I told you that twice Sandberg would hit home runs off Bruce Sutter? The Cubs won the game in the 11th. Whitey Herzog, the Cardinals manager, said, Ryan Sandberg is the best baseball player I've ever seen as far as I'm concerned. But the wild thing, because this is the Sandberg game, maybe people don't remember that Willie McGee for the Cardinals hit for the cycle in that game. But that was really the launching point for Sandberg, one of the great, great second basemen of all time. I think when he retired, he had like the most Silver Slugger awards for a second baseman. I think now he's tied or something with maybe with Altuve. But just a great career. Interesting background there. Just pour one out for Ryan Sandberg. One of the first players I really remember as a superstar growing up.
If he's not on the Rushmore for second baseman, he's got to be pretty close.
Yeah, that's a good discussion. I'll have to think about that. All right, who else has a buzzer beater?
I've got one that probably should have been thrown in there as a punch. You know, my favorite all-time giant before the end of his career was probably LT, Lawrence Taylor. Mm. But, you know, he became kind of a piece of crap after he retired and managed to get himself on the sex offender list, which is not a good thing, not something that anybody who has anything to do with programming for children really ought to have anything to do with. And so my punch would go to whoever it is in the administration who recommended to President Trump when he decided to reinstitute the presidential physical fitness test to put Lawrence Taylor on the commission. You know, I'm sure it wasn't Trump's idea. I'm sure somebody suggested it. But Jesus, of all athletes to pick, I mean, why not just pick Hernandez posthumously to put on this thing? You can't put a sex offender on the presidential physical fitness test for middle school and high school children. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I mean, Jeffrey Epstein was dead already. So otherwise, I don't know. I'm just going to leave it there.
Real quick buzzer. Particularly in honor of our comrades who cannot be on for this episode, who are real lovers of college football and SEC football, Milk and Pope. The first preseason poll has come out for college football. We're only about 15, 20 days away from the first game. And for the first time ever in the coaches' poll, and believe it or not, in their storied career, Texas is number one. It is Arch Manning season coming up. Texas, according to the coaches, is the team to beat, followed by what should be an incredible Big Ten matchup this year between Ohio State at number two, Penn State at number three, Georgia at number four, and as always, Notre Dame at number five. So we can see Notre Dame get in the playoff and lose by 30 points. But I will say this, Notre Dame has had an unbelievable recruiting class this year. If they can get some of the last couple recruiting classes on the field playing well, Notre Dame will be good. Shout out to Pope, who could either choose Alabama at 8 or SMU at 16. He's got two options in the queue this year. And Mr. Milk has got Florida with a lot of people watching their quarterback and that team this year. At number 17, don't let us down, Milk.
Mm. All right. Good show this week.
Have a good week.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace. Tune in next month.
Go Birds.